Good morning, everyone. We have a good crowd this morning, and it's good to see, especially those of you who are visiting with us. We do have a number of visitors from the area, and in fact, from other areas, from out of town. And it's just a great delight to have you with us and hope that you benefit from your time with us in our study of God's Word and worship of His name this morning. Before we get into this morning's lesson, I do want to make just a note about Melissa. As you know, she's not here today. Last Sunday evening, she started coming down with something, and she's just been going downhill ever since. Took her to the doctor yesterday, and they diagnosed her with some kind of viral infection, and they said it is now in the process of turning into the flu. So that kind of kills our vacation plans for this week, but we'll somehow get through all of that. The important thing right now is that she get to feeling better, and I would certainly solicit your prayers in her behalf. Passage that we read a moment ago in Acts chapter 20 is part of a longer monologue that the Apostle Paul had for the leadership of the church in Ephesus. As far as he knew, he was seeing them for the last time, and these were his final parting remarks to this group of men in doing their work in the church at Ephesus. Basically, it's a summary of the kind of attitude they need to take with them into their work among the people of God that they work with. And you'll notice in verse 35 that he summarized this attitude or the spirit of the work that they are to do by quoting the words of the Lord Jesus, that he said, "It is more blessed to give than to receive." Now, the curious thing about this quotation from the words of Christ is that you can read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in vain for these words. They're not there. So this would, of course, suggest that the four Gospels are not intended to provide an exhaustive account of everything that Jesus taught. There are a lot of other things that Jesus taught that are not recorded in those four books, and this brief statement right here is among that body of teaching that is not to be found in the four Gospels. But, of course, Paul quotes it from the mouth of Christ, so we can take it on confidence that it was something that, in fact, Jesus taught. It certainly fits the spirit of what Jesus taught in so many different places. In fact, we didn't plan it this way, but Larry's class this morning fit this theme beautifully, talking about humility and self-denial, self-sacrifice. And that's the main idea that Paul is getting across to these elders of the church at Ephesus. Of course, we are coming up now, just 2 days shy of Christmas Day. This is the day when everybody around us celebrates the birth of Christ. Now, I'm confident that I do not have to reiterate to this audience that, at least from a biblical standpoint, we have no idea what day Christ was born. I won't go into all the history of how December 25th came to be selected as the day that Christ was born. We simply don't know, at least from the basis of the Scriptures. And I'm also confident that I do not have to stress to you that the Bible nowhere asks us to even celebrate the birth of Christ as a religious holy day. Now, what families do in the privacy of their own homes, the giving of gifts and the Christmas trees and all of that is a cultural celebration. That's another thing. But as far as some kind of religious high and holy day where we honor God and honor Christ on the day of His birth, the Bible just doesn't say anything about that. So that's why we do not honor the December 25th as the birthday of Christ, and certainly not some kind of religious holy day. However, in the spirit of striking while the iron is hot, we are very close to the day that everybody else recognizes as the birthday of Christ, and so I think it would be appropriate to address the subject of giving. Most of us will have packages under the tree, and we are eagerly awaiting being able to open our packages and get those Argyle socks or the Red Ryder BB gun or whatever it is that's under the Christmas tree, because that's just become a traditional part of the holiday, has it not? The giving of gifts and the receiving of gifts. And what I'd like for us to do is to take this statement that Paul quotes of Jesus, it is more blessed to give than to receive, and I'd like for us to just analyze that for a while this morning. Let's talk about what it means to give. Now let me start with the proposition that there is giving and then there is giving. And they're not necessarily the same. And let me explain what I mean by that by turning to Luke chapter 6 and look at something that Luke records Jesus as having said that I think will help us focus our attention on the distinction that I'm trying to lay out here. Look in Luke chapter 6 and verse 35, where Jesus says, "Love your enemies, do good, and lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for He is kind to the unthankful and evil." I'd like for us to concentrate on what He said after loving your enemies, doing good, and lending. He says, hoping for nothing in return. Now, think about that for a little bit. Does that not imply that there are occasions, there are scenarios in which we can give something to somebody, but we expect some kind of payback? We expect something in return. In other words, it's not really a gift. It's not something that we're giving of ourselves. It is a ploy to seek some kind of selfish advantage. Yes, we're giving somebody something, but we're looking for some kind of payback. We want that to come back to us in some fashion. We're trying to get some kind of advantage for ourselves as a result of what we are giving. And it doesn't take very long to recognize a lot of different examples of that, several of which are mentioned in the Bible. For example, in Matthew chapter 6, you remember that Jesus talked about the hypocrites who He described as standing on the street corners and blowing trumpets when they give their alms or do their charitable deeds. And Jesus said they're doing this that they might be seen of men. In other words, they want their acts of charity, their gifts, to be a means by which people will shower on them the accolades and the praise and the glory as being great givers. And Jesus' point in that chapter was, fine, but that's all they're going to get. God's not impressed with that kind of giving. So clearly, that's a different kind of giving than what Paul is talking about to the elders of the church at Ephesus in Acts 20. There he said, it's more blessed to give than to receive. And then in Matthew 6, he said, this kind of giving won't get past the ceiling as far as God is concerned. It doesn't mean anything to Him. You can also look at it as an example in Mark chapter 7, where Jesus is being criticized by the scribes and Pharisees because His disciples do not wash their hands when they come into the marketplace before they eat. And Jesus turned the tables on these men and says, why do you violate the commandment of God for sake of your tradition? And He gives a specific example of these men designating a certain portion of their possessions, of their financial goods, of designating that as what they call Corban. It's dedicated to the temple, dedicated to God. Now, it's still in their possession, still in their control. They haven't actually physically given it to the temple yet. They've just designated or tagged it as belonging to God. And then as a result of having made that designation, they then release themselves from the obligation of taking care of their aged parents. And Jesus said, you're violating one of the Ten Commandments of honoring your father and mother for the sake of your tradition. They have, in effect, given something to the Lord, but it was only as a ploy to escape the responsibility of taking care of their parents. And again, Jesus says, I'm not impressed with that kind of a gift. God isn't either. If that's what we call giving, then God would say, spare me. I'm not interested in that kind of a gift. You can go into Acts chapter 5, story of Ananias and Sapphira, who had sold their land and had given a portion of that land to the, or a portion of the proceeds to the apostles, and apparently had lied to the apostles in saying they had given everything when in fact they had held something back. And Peter said, why has it entered your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and to God? Boom, they dropped dead. They had given something to the Lord, as it were, to the treasury that the apostles were maintaining for the support of the poor among them. But it was not the kind of gift that impressed God, because their motive was improper. It was bad. And you can apply the same sort of understanding to a lot of examples of giving today. We have very wealthy philanthropists in our society today who will very eagerly, strategically target their giving big sums of money, but they will do so in order to achieve maximum tax breaks and PR coverage. Which raises the question, if they did not get the tax breaks and they did not get the PR, would they be still giving that kind of contribution? If not, why not? If not, why are they giving the money in the first place? In other words, it is possible to give something, but not for the right reason, not in the sense that Paul was talking about here in Acts chapter 20. One more example. Spouses can sometimes make great sacrifices for their mates. They can give oh so much of themselves for the other. And only later does the receiving spouse find out that, well, actually they're expecting some kind of payback. They're expecting something in return. That gift, that sacrifice, constantly gets thrown up in the face of the other person. Look what I did for you. I made this sacrifice. Oh, haven't I done so much for you? And this is the way you... Listen, if that's what our giving means to our spouses, what's the difference between that and all the other examples we're just looking at? That kind of giving doesn't mean anything to God. And frankly, it doesn't impress other people around who finally wake up and realize they're being manipulated. Do you see what I'm saying here? There's a difference between the kind of giving that Paul is talking about and the kind of giving that we so often get ourselves involved in. And we need to recognize that distinction. You see, the gift itself is not nearly as important as the motive behind the gift. Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and look at what Paul says in verse 3. Now, we recognize the rest of this chapter as Paul's great soliloquy on love. But notice how Paul introduces it in verse 3. Though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, but have not love, it profits me nothing. Do you recognize the connection that Paul is making here? He's saying, I can be the most generous person in the world. But if that generosity is not motivated by a pure, unselfish love, a desire to help others, no strings attached, simply for the joy of the good that it does to other people, if I'm not doing my good deeds and extending my generosity for that reason, then he says, all of that generosity is for naught. Giving without genuine, unselfish love really doesn't amount to anything. We're just wasting our time. We're playing at our religion. This is not the kind of giving that impresses God. We have to give, as Jesus said in that passage in Luke chapter 6, hoping for nothing in return. There are no ulterior motives involved here. There are no hidden agendas. We're not out to seek some kind of advantage for ourselves. We are being generous with what we have with other people out of no other reason than because we want them to benefit from what has happened. And that's it. From that point, we back away, and as long as they're happy, we're happy. And that's it. Now, that's the kind of motive that has to be attached or a part of our giving. Look at the many times throughout the Scriptures that we find giving coupled with love. For example, the passage that Bruce mentioned to us in the Lord's Supper this morning. God so loved the world, loved, that He gave His only begotten Son. The love is what motivated the gift. The gift was motivated by the love. He so loved us that He gave that great gift. Look in Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20, where Paul says, "The life that I now live, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave Himself for me." The two are linked. Look in the book of Ephesians in chapter 5, where Paul uses this coupling actually twice. In verse 2, he says, "Walk in love as Christ also has loved us and given Himself for us." He loved and He gave Himself. And then he makes application of this principle down in verse 25. "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself for her." And we could go on. There are other passages that very clearly link the concept of this unselfish love to the concept of giving. So the only love that really means anything is the kind of love that gives unselfishly. Conversely, the only kind of giving that means anything is that giving that is motivated by unselfish love. So both of those elements have to be joined together in order for the giving to be of any value. And look at one more example that I think helps tie all this together. In 1 John chapter 4 in verse 10. And that really brings us full circle now to the application to the spirit of the season that we are engaged in here. Where John says that in this is love, not that we loved God, but that He loved us and gave His Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Now we're familiar with what the idea of the birth of Christ means to everybody. It's God sending His Son to this earth. But let's stop and think about this for a little bit. Everybody today is all focused on cute little baby Jesus in swaddling clothes, laying in the manger with His mom and Joseph and the wise men and the shepherds standing around. Why did God do that? Why did Jesus agree to come from His exalted place in heaven, where He had all the glory and the prestige and the power of deity? Why did He give all that up to come here to this earth? And the reason I think we are all familiar with, God was consigning Jesus to, we'll call it a raw deal. This was going to be unlike anything Jesus had ever experienced before. You know, it's very easy for us as human beings, when life gets tough, to shake our fist at God and say, "God, You don't understand what it's like to live here on this earth, to have to go through what I have to go through in my life." And how many times do we complain about God doesn't care what I'm going through? In sending Christ to this earth, Jesus was sending a very strong and powerful message to the human race saying, "I do care. I care so much, I'm going to participate in your life, your existence, with you." And that's what the life of Jesus is all about. It began in that little manger. But throughout the rest of His life, Jesus had to go through life, struggle through life, just like the rest of us do. But in sending Jesus to this earth and having to eventually experience not just the normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill sort of pains and struggles and hardships that the rest of us do, but to, in fulfilling His mission as the Son of God, have to finally experience the ridicule and the rejection and the humiliation and the horrible death on the cross. In doing all of that, did you notice that nowhere in any of this did God ever set any kind of preconditions on this? There were no negotiations with representatives of the human race saying, I'd like to do this for you guys if you'll do this for me. There's no quid pro quo in which God said, okay, I will do this, but I need this in return. No, this was a unilateral decision on God's part. In this is love. Not that we love God. See, God's not responding to our love to Him, to our request to Him, God, would you step in and do something to help us out here? That wasn't what motivated what God did. In this is love, that He loved us and sent His Son. That's what this is all about. If you want to know what the true meaning of giving is all about, spend some time pondering what it meant for Jesus to leave all the peace and the glory and the tranquility and the happiness and the glory of heaven and come down here to live life and scrape out a living like the rest of us have to do and die the kind of terrible death that He had to die. And just on the off chance that somebody's going to appreciate that somewhere along the way. That is what giving is all about. That was God's gift to humanity. You know, all the laws that God has given man, all the commandments that He has placed upon us, all the great works of power that God has performed down through the ages could not match this gift in revealing the true nature of God. He is a God of love, one that truly loves and cares for us and has compassion for us. What else could He do to demonstrate that than what He has done in giving His Son? That's what this is all about. So now let's pause for a moment and let's consider, what does this mean for me? If, in fact, the coming of Christ to this earth and His eventual death on the cross, if that is the ultimate expression of what it means to give from an unselfish love, then what does that mean for me? I want to suggest two lessons that we can draw from this. The first lesson is that this ought to help clarify in my mind the purpose of my life. The purpose of my life is to give, not to get. Look again at that passage that we started out with in Acts chapter 20. It is more blessed to give than to receive. How many times do we ever quote that in opening our packages on Christmas Day? What do we consider to be more blessed, to give or to receive? To frantically open those packages and find out, what did I get? You know, the more scary thought is, what are we teaching our children when we load that Christmas tree with a bunch of gifts for them? I'm not saying it's wrong to give gifts to our children on Christmas. I'm just suggesting we need to stop and think about, what's the real meaning here? What is it that we're really learning about ourselves and about what giving is all about? Can we truly say that we believe it is more blessed, it is more happy, it is more joyful, it is more of a benefit to me to give than there is to receive? But think about that for a moment. That's just one of many paradoxes that Jesus taught while He was here upon this earth, is it not? How many times do we read Jesus saying something like, in order to gain your life or to save your life, you must lose it. In order to be great, you have to serve. In order to be rich, you have to be poor. In order to win the crown, you have to bear the cross. Over and over and over again, Jesus keeps telling us things like this, that from a purely human standpoint, it doesn't compute. That doesn't make any sense. It's the exact opposite of how we tend to look at life and the things of this life. But you notice the common element in all of these is the spirit of self-sacrificial giving. We have to empty ourselves, give to others before we can become full. And again, it makes no sense from an earthly standpoint, but that's the principle that Jesus over and over again kept trying to get across to us, as we were noting in our adult class this morning. Even the apostles of Jesus had a hard time learning that lesson. How many times were they elbowing each other to determine who was going to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus had to sit them down and say, look, fellas, this is not the way it works. And he would lay one of these paradoxes on them. If you want to be great, you're going to have to become a servant. And they just struggled with that. And I fear that we struggle with it too. Yet Jesus said, it's more blessed to give than to receive. And you know why? And he can state that with full confidence, even though it's hard for us to accept it. But he understood a principle that we oftentimes don't stop and think about. And that is that giving resonates with the divine part of our nature. We are made in the image of God. You might say, in a sense, that there's a little part of God in all of us. He made us to be like Him. We reflect who He is. And if, in fact, the nature of God, as we've just noted, is to give, and to give unconditionally, as He did in giving His Son, then when we do the same thing, when we give unconditionally to somebody else, we feel a little bit of God within us. It makes us truly feel good, like we have accomplished something. There is a purpose in my life. My purpose is not to get, to accumulate, to acquire, to build up possessions for myself. And yet that's how we spend so much of our time. My purpose is, as one who is made in the image of God, to do what God did, to give. That's His nature. It's my nature. I just don't recognize it and appreciate it sometimes. But if we could just stop this mad rush to get and acquire more things for ourselves and step back and look at what I'm really here for, and that is to give as God has given to me, it could just open up a whole new vista on our life and what our life is all about. You know, we struggle with this concept that it's more blessed to give than to receive, and we spend far too much time and effort looking out for our own interests instead of the interests of others. And you know the great irony in all of that? Now let's stop and think for a little bit. Why do we spend so much time? We set aside what Jesus says here about being more blessed to give than receive, and we just concentrate so much on the receiving side. If I could just get more, if I could have this gadget and that toy and this position and all these other things that I want for myself, if I could have all that, then I'd be happy. Where's that gotten us? Why is it that we are the most miserable and unhappy people on the face of the earth? And oh, by the way, we're also the richest. Do the math. We're violating why God put us here. We are not serving the purpose for which we've been placed upon this earth. That's why we're unhappy. It's not until we can set that selfish concern aside and look at life and our purpose in life the same way that God views His existence, that is, to give, and start fulfilling that. And focusing on that and concentrating on that, that we will actually find a meaning and a purpose and a value in our life that we did not know existed. If you come to Christ for what you can get, Lord, I am needy. Lord, I have problems. Lord, I have troubles. And Lord, I need help with this, and I need help with that, and Lord, would you just please help me? And if that's why you come to the Lord, because you want the Lord to do something for you, whoa, stop and think just a minute what you just said. You're wanting it for yourself, right? You're more than happy to take whatever handouts the Lord will give to you. You want to receive. You never stop to think what the Lord's trying to tell you. No, the Lord doesn't want you to come to Him for what He can give you. And He can give you an awful lot. He wants you to come to Him in order that you can give everything that you've got. Are you ready to do that? Again, we were talking about that in our adult class this morning. It just flies in the face of what we think life is all about. But even in our relationship with God, with the Lord, how often do we look at it from the standpoint of what can I get out of it? And I'm here to tell you, that's not what it's about. Until we can view our relationship with the Lord as a question of what can I give to the Lord, to those around me, to the world that I live in. Until we can see our lives from that vantage point, it really isn't going to be worth an awful lot. We're never really going to understand what it means that to give is more blessed than to receive. Second lesson that we can learn from this study is that it forces me to put all my giving in perspective. Okay, I think we're convinced at this point that I really need to be giving more of myself to others. Well, let me pose this question to you as a question you need to pose to yourself before you make that sacrifice, that gift. Why am I doing this? Really, deep down, why am I doing this? What is my motive in making this sacrifice that I'm about to make? Am I doing it in order to score points with other people? Am I doing it in order to manipulate things so that good things are going to come my way in return? If that's why you're doing it, don't bother. All you're doing is chasing a selfish dream. You're in it for yourself. Let's not kid around here. And again, that kind of giving just doesn't impress God very much, doesn't mean much to Him. So don't bother. Are we making this sacrifice in order to put God in my debt? To prove to God what a good person I am? And how lucky He is to have somebody like me on His team. Now, you know, as well as I do, that my giving of anything to God or in God's behalf earns me nothing in the presence of God. Nothing. I can never give enough. I can never sacrifice enough to put God in my debt. When I look at what God has done for me, how can I possibly come anywhere close to repaying that? It makes no difference what I do in this life. I will always, forever, be in God's debt for what He has given to me. At best, all my gifts are but a dim reflection of what God has given to me. I have nothing to brag about. I don't care what I give, how much I sacrifice, how much it costs me. I still owe God, and always will. And that's why my path in life is a very simple one. I just have to keep on giving, and keep on giving, and keep on giving, because I know how much God has given to me. As we come down to the close of this year that has gone by, and we are looking forward to the dawning of a new year, I would like to issue a challenge for each one of us this morning for the new year. Step one, take some time to evaluate long and hard what your life is all about. What are your life goals? What are you here for? What do you dedicate your life to every waking moment? You know, there's really only two answers to that question. Getting or getting? Getting or giving? So, which two? Do you dedicate your life to getting things, accumulating things, receiving things? Or do you dedicate your life to giving things? Serving, helping, sacrificing for others. So, make that choice. What is your life based on? Which one of those two concepts or activities or motivations form the foundation of your life? Answer that question and be honest with yourself about it. If you're not comfortable with the answer to that question, then that brings us to step two. Look around you at the world, at your life, at the people in your life, the community in which you live. Are there needs out there that you are qualified to address? That you have something in your life that you could use to help address those needs? Then here's the challenge. Throw yourself into meeting that need. Sacrifice your time, your money, your effort for no other reason than because of the good that others can enjoy from what you do in their behalf. I would suggest you start with your own family. Look at your children, your parents, your spouse. Is there something that I can do to make these people's lives more pleasant, more happy, more beneficial? Something that I can do to help them? Remember, expecting nothing in return. The motive is this genuine, unselfish love that we've been talking about. Same kind of love that God has for me, that's what I'm giving to them. And then expand from your family and look at your brethren, the people who share your faith. We are, in a sense, the family of God, are we not? How much do we truly sacrifice and give for the benefit of those whose faith we share, those whose support and encouragement has meant so much to us through the years? How much do we give back to them? And then look around you at the greater community in which you live. What are the needs that are out there in the world? You know, it's very easy for us to isolate ourselves from the world around us. And as Larry pointed out in the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector, to thank God that we're not like these people out here in the world around us. What are we doing about the people out here in the world around us who are struggling and are suffering and are crying for help in a multitude of different ways? What are we doing to help them? If you do that, then I can assure you that you will encounter a sense of satisfaction and accomplishment far beyond anything else that you have ever accomplished in your life. You'll know what it means to say that it is more blessed to give than to receive. And more importantly, you will come to better understand and appreciate the love that God has given to you. If you're here this morning and you recognize the tremendous value of the offer that God has placed before you, and you have yet to avail yourself of that offer, then I would encourage you to throw yourself at the feet of your Savior right now. And we will do everything that we possibly can to help you as the people of God in this place to get your life right with Him and to get you on the right path that will help you to find a life abundant. If you're already a child of God and you have squandered so much of what God has given you, you recognize the mistakes that you've made and you seek our support in going to God in prayer, we will be more than happy to do that. If there's anything that we can do to help you in your walk with the Lord, won't you come forward and express your need as we stand and sing the invitation song?